Idea that comes out of many-body localization, namely which we've called localization-protected quantum order. So we had a paper in PhysRevB last summer. There's also a paper from Caltech group, well, David Pecker, who's now at, he just recently moved to Pittsburgh, and paper from Weitzman, Voska, and Altman, as well as another one from Berkeley, which I should have listed, but okay. And so what this is about many-body localization, which I'll say a little bit about, although I actually come at it more from just the one-dimensional quantumizing model, where we can get to it, both many-body localization and localization protected order, starting from what may be for many of you or some of you a familiar model. But anyways, the big message here is that many-body localization actually allows a whole new world of ordered phases and quantum phase transitions that's invisible to equilibrium stat-mech, but it's there dynamically. So dynamically stable phases and dynamical phase transitions of a type I'll tell you about. And the types of ordering I'm going to talk about, I'm mostly going to just talk about symmetry breaking order because that's simpler and more familiar to everyone, just magnetic order. But it could the concepts here apply equally well to many types of topological order, as has been explored by a number of groups, including in our paper. Okay. So we're going to start with something which is perhaps familiar to a lot of people, namely the one-dimensional transverse field Ising spin chain. Okay? So we have spins on a line, and this is, you might say, the hydrogen atom of quantum critical points. If you look in Sachdev's book, this is the simplest example he gives. So first, let's look at the system with no disorder. So we have an Ising interaction. So these are quantum spins, Pauli matrices. We have an Ising interaction, and we have a transverse field. And I'm going to emphasize here, we're going to be looking at an isolated system. So we have these spins, and they're not coupled to anything else. So there's no heat bath. I don't want to assume there's a heat bath. I don't want to, put in Boltzmann distributions. I want to look at the real quantum dynamics of this system, right, as a closed, isolated quantum system. Okay. Now, this model here can be exactly solved. It's a textbook example. Essentially, it was done by Onsager in the 40s, although in different language, when he solved the two-dimensional Ising model. And so what you do is these spins are converted to fermions by attaching Jordan-Wigner strings to them, and then you do a Bogu-Yubov rotation to get a Hamiltonian of non-interacting fermions like this. So you just get non-interacting fermions. The steps of exactly how you do that aren't that important to what I'm trying to say, and they may be familiar to a lot of you. Okay, so this Hamiltonian is a bunch of non-interacting fermions. Now, this system has two phases. Basically, does the transverse field dominate, in which case the ground state will have the spins pointed along the x-axis, or does the interaction dominate, in which case the ground state will be magnetically ordered with magnetization along the z-axis, either up or down? Right? And those are the two phases. It's just which of these two non-commuting terms dominates in the Hamiltonian. So first, let's look at the paramagnetic phase. So the paramagnetic phase is when the transverse field dominates. The ground state has all the spins. Well, the ground state, in the absence of this interaction, has all the spins pointing along the plus x-axis. When you add the interactions, it picks up some quantum fluctuations, but this casual description here remains accurate in this phase. So we have the ground states are spins along the plus x-axis, and when you add one of these fermions, so that represents that would represent the vacuum of these fermions, no fermions present. And then when you add a fermion, what the fermion in terms of spins is, it's just flipping a spin into its excited state, where the spin is pointed along the minus x-axis, so it's in the excited state of this term in the Hamiltonian. In this phase, the ground state is non-degenerate. The spectrum is gapped, right? So here's the energy. It's just got it's got the usual kind of dispersion with a gap above zero energy at zero momentum here. And again, casually speaking, the transverse field is the energy of a stationary fermion, right? When you make a fermion, you flip the spin, and the interaction here causes the fermions to hop because sigma z flips sigma x, right? And so if we have a spin pointed along an excited spin here, and we hit it with this operator, what it'll do is it'll flip this spin down and the neighboring spin up along the x-axis, so it'll move that excitation over, right? And so what happens here for these fermions in the paramagnetic phase, this is the sort of energy of making a fermion, and this is the kinetic energy of the fermion, just speaking somewhat informally. But that is indeed what happens after you include all the proper details. Okay, so that's the paramagnetic phase. And since it's non-interacting fermions, this spectrum of excitations, this is the spectrum of excitations, well, right. So this is the spectrum to make a fermion, no matter whether you're in the ground state or not. And then if we turn it upside down to a negative energy, that would be the spectrum of removing a fermion, which would have negative energy. I should have drawn that, a general spectrum where we have both creating a particle and removing a particle, particle and hole. So the system kind of looks like a semiconductor in that sense. Okay. So now let's go to the ferromagnetic phase. So here again is the Hamiltonian, and I'm gonna actually just for purposes of discussion, I'm gonna consider a finite system with open ends. But ultimately we want to take the number of spins to infinity. So this is L is the length of the system. Okay, again, you can map it to free fermions. The eigenstates here, those will be particle in a box eigenstates because it's in a finite system. Particles can't go off the end of the system. Now when we go into the ferromagnetic phase is when the interaction is dominant and the transverse field is smaller, and then the ground state is magnetically ordered, and the ground state in the limit of large L is twofold degenerate, and in any finite L, the ground states are split a little bit, and they're Schrödinger cat states, right? So I'm gonna call those two ground states zero for ground state and plus and minus, and you have two eigenstates of this Hamiltonian, which are magnetized up, plus or minus magnetized down over square root of 2, right? And so these are coherent linear combinations of macroscopically different states, and so that's why I call them Schrödinger cat states, right? And that's the way the ground states of an Ising model are if you're dealing with a finite size system, right? And this Hamiltonian here has a symmetry, which is the Ising symmetry, a Z2 symmetry. And that's this operator here, which I call F for flip. It's a global spin flip. And what you have to do, you don't just flip the spin. Actually, what you do is you rotate every spin about its x-axis by pi. So that leaves the transverse field alone, right? You have to rotate about the x-axis in order for the flip operation to commute with the transverse field. And then if you rotate by pi, you flip all z spins, and the z spins only appear in products of 2, and so if I flip them both, that leaves this term invariant also. It picked, a minus sign on each term, right? So this global spin flip operator, which is a product It's just simultaneous rotation of all spins about their x-axis by angle pi. This commutes with this Hamiltonian, and therefore the eigenstates of this Hamiltonian can also be eigenstates of this. And my two Schrödinger cat states, one of them is even and one of them is odd under this symmetry operation, right? Okay. And when I have a finite size system of length L, the splitting between these two Schrödinger cat states is exponentially small in the ratio of the transverse field over the interaction, because to flip this all spins up to all spins down, you got to flip every spin, and that's something that only happens at nth order in perturbation theory in the smaller transverse field, and that'll flip the spin. So you have this energy splitting between the two Schrödinger cat states. It vanishes in the thermodynamic limit, and they become degenerate. So in the thermodynamic limit, you can break the symmetry by just saying the up state all spins up. I'm being a little casual here. Of course, this isn't all spins. When we have a non-zero transverse field, this spins up. It's not really all spins up. It's all spins up plus the quantum fluctuations produced by the transverse field. And this is all spins down plus the quantum fluctuations produced by the transverse field. But those fluctuations are not big enough to suppress the long-range order when you're in the ferromagnetic phase. But anyways, the broken symmetry state, which is magnetized up in the thermodynamic limit, is just the linear combination of these two Schrödinger cat states, where I add these and subtract these, and in the limit L goes to infinity, this symmetry broken state is dynamically stable, and in this case, it's protected by an energy gap to making domain walls, right? So if I put a domain wall in the bulk of the system so that it's not long range ordered, that costs an energy, and there's an energy gap, and so the broken symmetry is protected by that. And it's only there in the ground state for the pure problem. When we look at the excited states in the ferromagnetic phase, they are the domain walls, and so the fermions. So again, my Hamiltonian can become non-interacting fermions, and when you go through the arithmetic here, Jordan Vigner and Bogoyuboff to get this, you will find that the fermion, these particles, these fermions, non-interacting fermions, are domain walls. So for example, if I take the Schrödinger cat state that's even under spin flip, and I hit it with a fermion operator at position x, right? What it'll do is it'll make a domain wall at position x. And so you will make this Schrödinger cat state, which is this magnetization pattern with the spins up to the left of x, spins down to the right of x, plus the thing you get under global spin flip. And without this order, these domain walls are mobile. The interaction now gives the energy of the wall, right? Because when I put in a domain wall, I violate this term, and so it costs me energy J. So a stationary wall costs energy J. And now the transverse field is the kinetic energy of the domain wall, because if I flip a spin next to the domain wall, right, sigma x flips the z component of the spin. This is drawn in terms of the z components. If I flip a spin right next to a domain wall, it just moves the domain wall over by one site, right? So for a domain wall, this is a hopping operator, right? So you see the roles of J and H in terms of the fermions have been reversed between the two phases, because there's a duality between these two phases. They actually map exactly onto one another under a duality. Okay. So domain walls are mobile, except in this case, there is the lowest energy mode. And the lowest energy mode is the fermion operator that, so the ground state for a finite L is the even Schrödinger cat state under the global spin flip. And if I add the lowest energy fermion, what that does is flip this plus to minus. And if I'm in the minus state and I remove the lowest energy fermion, it flips it back to plus. So the lowest energy fermion is the operator that basically flips me between these two Schrödinger cat ground states. So it has an energy which is exponentially small in the length of the system. And so our fermions in the ferromagnetic phase have a dispersion that looks like this. There's this one zero energy mode in the limit of L goes to infinity. And you can think of it as, right, the difference between, again, speaking somewhat informally, the difference between this state and this state, you can think, oh, I just added domain walls at the end of the system, right? What does a domain wall do? It flips all spins to the right of it and not to the left of it, right? So the difference, this zero energy mode is really, and there's an exact duality where you can map this onto Majorana's. The zero energy mode can be thought of as two Majorana modes at the end of the spin chain, which together, so two Majorana fermions together make a regular Dirac fermion, and those two together make this what I call K equals zero mode, which really isn't zero momentum inside the system. It's a mode that's actually stuck at the ends of the system. And it has zero energy in the thermodynamic limit. And as I said, that the operators that create and annihilate this zero momentum mode flip between the odd and even states. Okay? So this is the structure of the transverse field Ising model, just emphasizing some points that I'm gonna use in a second. Okay, so now we can look at the phase diagram of this model. So let's put J over H along this axis. So here's the paramagnet, here's the ferromagnet. Let's put both temperature and energy above the ground state along the vertical axis. And so the ground state here is paramagnetic. The ground state is the two ferromagnetic ground states over here in the ferromagnetic phase. There's the quantum critical point between them, which is where the gap in the spectrum closes and reopens. It closes coming in from the paramagnet, and when it reopens, it leaves behind this zero energy mode below the gap, right? And when people discuss this quantum critical point, and you assume you're coupled to a heat bath, people say, oh, the quantum critical point is just at zero temperature. And if you cross above the quantum critical point, everything is perfectly analytic, which is true thermodynamically, right? But if you say I have an isolated system and I look at its spectrum, so let's say we could go in there and do a spin flip spectroscopy and ask, what is the energy I'm going to see? You know, think of it like photo emission. What's the energy you're going to see if I take this system and I flip a spin, make a fermion or remove a fermion? You're going to see over here a dispersion relation with an upper band for making a fermion, a gap, a lower band for removing a fermion, and no zero energy mode. And that'll be true no matter what energy you're at, because the spectrum is a property of the Hamiltonian. It's not a property of the state, right? And over here, you will see a similar spectrum, except you're going to have in the middle of the gap this zero energy mode, right? And those gaps will close along this dotted line, right? So if instead of drawing a thermodynamic phase diagram, I draw an eigenstate phase diagram or a dynamic phase diagram, there's actually a phase transition line going straight up from here in this model where the dynamics of the system really changes in a singular way. A gap closes and reopens, a zero mode appears over here, which wasn't there. So there's this quantum critical point is not just at zero temperature, right? Now, if you do thermodynamic averages, you can't see this. There's no thermodynamic singularity at that line, right? And that's known rigorously. You can actually, you know, this is really just the it's can be easily calculated. So this critical point, it's readily detected at zero temperature, and there's a quantum critical regime around zero temperature which is readily detected. But up here at high temperatures, it's there, but you can only see it with some dynamical measurements, like spectroscopy. So that's a point that typically is not emphasized when people talk about this exactly solvable spin chain, but it's obviously there. Okay. So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to add disorder, but I'm going to add disorder that preserves my Z2 symmetry. Okay, so first I'm just going to add disorder. I'm going to preserve my Z2 symmetry and preserve my ability to map the model to free fermions. And so what I do first is I just make the coefficients, the interaction between the spins, this Ising interaction, and this transverse field, I'm just going to make them quenched random variables drawn from some distribution. Let's for now keep this ferromagnetic and keep them the same sign, but just make them somewhat disordered, just to keep things a little simpler. Okay. So now my fermions, remember, in the ferromagnetic phase, this is the local energy of the fermion. And in the paramagnetic phase, this is the local energy of the fermion. So in both cases, if I make both of these random, the fermions now move in a random potential in one dimension. They also have a random local kinetic energy. And so when you have fermions in a random potential in one dimension, they're Anderson localized. With the disorder here, you can still do the Jordan-Wigner transformation and the Bogue-Yubar rotation and diagonalize the system. That was first noticed by McCoy and Wu approximately 50 years ago, and they solved this model with disorder. And so it still maps to a system of non-interacting fermions, but now these fermion operators create a fermion in a localized orbital. So my label alpha is a localized state of these fermions localized, right? And they're localized really all the way along here, although there's a little subtlety that happens at the quantum critical point, which I'll say a little bit about. Okay. So now our spin chain has some disorder, but it's still non-interacting fermions. So things are still kind of simple. Okay. Please interrupt with questions. Okay, so we've got our disordered transverse field Ising chain. Like I said, McCoy Wu 60s. Daniel Fisher did some really nice work on this problem in the 1990s. But these people, and this has generally always been true in these things, when you talk about a quantum problem, you focus on the ground state and the low-lying states, and you don't ask, people just traditionally have not investigated, what about if I look at highly excited states and look at the dynamics of the system and take the quantum dynamics seriously? This is a Hamiltonian for an isolated system, right? And so that's what's happening now because of AMO physics becoming many-body physics. We're really thinking a lot about quantum dynamics, not just in low-energy states like you think about in condensed matter typically, but in highly excited states, and in particular, just generic states of this model, which might represent infinite temperature. They have interest in quantum dynamics, right? And so this is coming out of that that enterprise of thinking about non-equilibrium dynamics, quantum dynamics in highly excited states. It's also, let me just mention, there's going to be a workshop here in Perimeter in a couple weeks that's going to be on that topic as well. Okay, so now I've got my disordered system. I'm going to look at its dynamical phase diagram with disorder, same axes. Okay, there's still a quantum critical point. Different universality class than the one without disorder. Daniel Fisher has a big long paper telling you almost everything about this phase transition here, because you can treat it essentially exactly with a real space renormalization group. We still have a ferromagnetic phase and a paramagnetic phase. In the paramagnetic phase, now the low-lying excitations are, right, so in the paramagnetic phase, in the ground states, again, the spins are along the plus x-axis, and the excitations are localized flips of the spin to the other direction, right? So you have, well, here I've shown a highly excited state with the spins along the x-axis pointing in random directions. And in the paramagnetic phase, the sigma x's are frozen. They're localized in certain positions. But the sigma z's are not frozen. These states here don't break the Z2 symmetry of the system. It's a paramagnet, right? Not the ground state, not the excited states. Okay. When you take into account quantum Griffith singularities, the lowest lying state near this phase transition, there's no gap left. The gap is filled in with, if you have strong enough disorder, is filled in with rare states, but the gap closes as a power law. So I say here, really, the gap to the lowest energy state is a power law in the length of the system, and that's what's called quantum Griffith effects, you know, due to rare states. Okay. Now over in the spin glass phase, okay, we have ferromagnetic ground states. These two Schrödinger cat ferromagnetic ground states. And again, we have a zero energy mode, which is now exponentially low energy in the length of the system, which is the thing which flips you between even and odd Schrödinger cat states. It's the two Majorana modes at the end of the system. But now the excited states up here are localized domain walls, right? Because the excited states in the ferromagnetic phase are domain walls. You put them in, those are fermions now in a random potential, they're going to get localized. So the excited states basically look like this, plus quantum fluctuations. So here you have a domain wall, domain wall, right? And it'll be this picture plus quantum fluctuations. And if there's a state with this domain pattern and the domain wall's in this position, there's also a state with everything flipped. And in the thermodynamic limit, these two states will be degenerate. The domain walls are in exactly the same places, so they have exactly the same energy, localized in the same states. And in a finite size system, you can make a pair of Schrödinger cat states, even and odd, out of these two states, right? So in this phase here, which the ground state is a ferromagnet, the Hamiltonian is a ferromagnet, but the excited states are actually spin glass phases. They break the Z2 symmetry. They have a particular spin pattern, which is dynamically stable because all the domain walls are frozen. So this is a spin glass phase in a certain sense, dynamically. So in the localized paramagnet, the patterns of sigma x are dynamically stable because of the localization of all these fermions, these spin flips, which are fermions. But the localized states do not break the symmetry, whereas in this phase over here, any particular pattern of domain walls and spins up and down breaks the Z2 symmetry, and in the thermodynamic limit is dynamically stable, and that symmetry breaking is protected by localization. And if I go across here in a highly excited state, I ask, what do the dynamically stable states look like over here? What do the eigenstates of the Hamiltonian look like over here? They don't break the symmetry. And then there's a phase transition, a quantum phase transition, where you go into a phase where the dynamically stable states, or the eigenstates of the Hamiltonian, do break the symmetry. Right? And so there's a symmetry-breaking phase transition here. It's totally invisible to the thermodynamics, because when you do a thermodynamic average at a finite temperature up here, you average over exponentially many states, and they all break the symmetry in different ways. And so after that average, there's no broken symmetry. It just looks like a paramagnet. There's no long-range order. So it's only when you look at the exact eigenstates of the Hamiltonian that you see this transition, or alternatively, if you give yourself an initial state that breaks the symmetry and you ask, is this symmetry breaking stable dynamically to infinite time? And you will find, no, over here it isn't. The z components of the spins will flip, whereas over here, the order in the z components of the spins that you put, you know, whatever pattern you put, there will be a memory of it to infinite time. And so it's a dynamical phase transition and also an eigenstate phase transition, right? And it's actually in the same universality class as the transition in the ground state, which Fisher treated. So Fisher treated the, the ground state here. If you run his RG for excited states, it actually works exactly the same way. When he did the RG for the ground state, what he would do is he would just find the strongest term in the Hamiltonian, put it in its ground state, and treat the quantum fluctuation systematically. Instead, you could just put it in the excited state and treat the quantum fluctuation systematically, and you get essentially exactly the same mathematics as he got. So there's a whole line of phase transitions here. In the ground state, it's actually a thermodynamic phase transition, as well as the highest excited state, which is the ground state for minus this Hamiltonian. But in between, where it represents a non-zero temperature, it's only a dynamic phase transition and not a thermodynamic phase transition. So this is a type of localization-protected quantum order. You have a symmetry-breaking order with a particular pattern, and it's protected from thermal fluctuations because all the thermal fluctuations are localized, and it remains stable. Okay, so now that, so far, I haven't said anything that's not there in these papers, although they didn't say it because they didn't think about the highly excited states, but they had all the math to do everything I just told you. It's just people generally think, oh, I'm up at a very high temperature and I have a quantum system, it behaves classically, right? People traditionally had not taken looking seriously at the quantum dynamics of a quantum system at very high temperatures just because people thought, oh, it's classical. There's not going to be any interesting quantum dynamics, but it's just not true. And I'm going to give you some more examples later. How am I doing? Okay, so now let's say, so this is non-interacting fermions. It's really an exactly solvable model. But let's now go over, what I'm going to do now is, let's say we're in the ferromagnetic phase, where the ground state is ferromagnetic, and the domain walls are all localized in the excited states. And let's now add more terms to this Hamiltonian that break the free fermion nature of it. So I'm going to add terms to make it a generic Hamiltonian that has interactions between these fermions. So I can't solve it exactly. And one way to do that, which is done in a recent paper by from Dresden, Kjell Bardersen and Pohlmann, just posted a last month or the month before, is to add simply just a second neighbor Ising interaction, right? So I had first neighbor interactions. If I just add a second neighbor interaction, that's I plus 2. When you write that in terms of fermions, that's a four fermion term. It's an interaction between the fermions. And so you can no longer just transform this guy to non-interacting fermions. It's a more generic non-integrable Hamiltonian, which can thermalize. Note that this interaction still preserves the Ising symmetry, the Z2 symmetry, because it's a second order in the Z, you know, it's sigma Z times sigma Z, so under a spin flip, it goes into itself because you flip both of those spins. Okay. Now, if we have non-interacting fermions and we add a weak interaction between the fermions, let me say that again. So there's this paper by Basco, Elena, Altshuler about many-body localization, which really sort of brought the subject to everybody's attention, although many-body localization is there in Anderson's original paper from almost 50 years earlier, but nobody really paid any attention to what he said. So if you have localized non-interacting fermions, so your system is localized but single-particle localized, and then you add a weak interaction between the fermions, the localization is stable to weak interactions. And this is what Bosco et al. Showed perturbatively. Okay. And this is just another example of what they did. They didn't do it for a spin chain. They did it more just for a particle model. But if you take what they did and apply it to this model, it says this localized phase I've been describing will be stable to adding such an interaction. So that's theoretical perturbative work. And then this has also been investigated in exact diagonalizations, as I said, from this paper here, which is on the archive. And so if we're in the part of the phase diagram where the ground state is ferromagnetic, and we add such a term here, we get a phase diagram that looks like this, qualitatively. So here's zero disorder, which is the pure problem. Here's the disorder strength along this axis, and along the vertical is adding excitations or turning up the temperature. So in the pure problem, as soon as you're at non-zero temperature and you add interactions between the fermions, they scatter off of each other and the thing thermalizes. So it really is a thermal, this one-dimensional system is a heat bath for itself and it equilibrates itself and it's a proper thermal phase. So we have the thermal paramagnet here, right? And that's true at high enough temperature at weak disorder, or at any temperature at weak enough disorder. Okay. And then there's a phase transition where it gets localized. I put strong enough disorder, it gets localized. But it, see, in this phase up here, it's a paramagnet with, if we're at very high temperature, it's only got very short-range correlations, right? No symmetry breaking. And this transition is a continuous phase transition. So when it gets localized, it's not going to be ordered, right? The correlation length is small here. It's a continuous phase transition, so on the other side, the correlation length is small, and so it's a localized paramagnet that it goes into first. It goes into a localized paramagnet first, and then at strong enough disorder or low enough energies, it orders into a localized spin glass where in this phase, like in the phase I talked to you about in the previous slide, I can break the symmetry, put a particular pattern of spins up and down, and that will be dynamically stable. Or the eigenstates in this phase are Schrödinger cat states, which break the Z2 symmetry. Okay. So in the thermal phase, this spin Hamiltonian all by itself without an external heat bath is enough to be a bath for the system in the thermodynamic limit. The localized phase are frozen under the dynamics of this Hamiltonian. They will only thermalize and lose their order if you couple it to some heat bath. So if I then actually add in, if this is a magnet in a real material, it's coupled to phonons, the phonons will flip these spins even if they're frozen under the spin dynamics. And so these phase transitions I'm talking about here they're not thermodynamic phase transitions. They're only there in the isolated system. And when you couple it to some external heat bath, they will just become crossovers. Okay. Like I say here, the transitions are only dynamical. They're invisible to equilibrium thermodynamics. You have some spin glass-like dynamics, but because there's nothing in the equilibrium thermodynamics, there's no divergence of the nonlinear susceptibility. And an interesting question here, which I don't know what the answer is to, is, could this, there's many magnetic materials that show spin glassy type dynamics. You might call them super paramagnets or spin glasses or whatever. And I would say if you're seeing spin glassy dynamics and you either haven't checked that the nonlinear susceptibility is showing a real spin glass divergence, or maybe you did check and it isn't, perhaps your system is exhibiting some of this physics here, where it's actually getting localized under the spin dynamics. And if you're at very low temperatures, the dynamics due to spin phonon interactions might be very slow. So this is a question. Does any many-body localization physics appear in any of the very many magnetic materials that show glassy physics? I'm not sure about that or not, but I think that's an interesting question for people to think about. Okay, so that was one dimension. What if we go to higher dimensions? So in higher dimensions, you can have thermodynamic phase transitions. So let's just look at the transverse field Ising model with some disorder in higher dimensions. So here we just have an Ising model on some lattice in higher dimensions. It's going to have a phase thermodynamic phase transition. We put a transverse field. Let's make the transverse field not so strong so that the ground state is still a ferromagnet. And again, let's keep it completely isolated from its environment, take the dynamics of this Hamiltonian seriously, and you get an interesting phase diagram that looks like this. So again, here's the disorder, here's the pure problem. Along this axis is temperature or excitation energy. So if you're in a thermal phase, the system does thermalize and it really does have a temperature. Whereas if you're in a localized phase, it doesn't really have a temperature. So that's why I'm sort of giving this axis two different labels, right? When there's a temperature, this axis could be the temperature. But if there's no temperature, just say it's the energy. And it's monotonic in the temperature, you know, just in the thermal phases, right? So here, there will be a if the transverse field is not too strong, there will be a thermodynamic phase transition where the system orders, right? So here at weak disorder, this is just the familiar story, a paramagnet at high temperature, a ferromagnet at low temperature. In both phases, the system is a good heat bath for itself. Under the dynamics of this spin problem, it will thermalize. In this phase here, it'll have a bunch of thermal Schrödinger cat eigenstates. I'll tell you a little bit about those a little later, if I have time. But then for strong enough disorder, it gets many-body localized. So there's a many-body localization phase transition here where it gets many-body localized. And there's a localized paramagnet here where the symmetry is not broken. A phase transition here within the within the localized phase where the symmetry gets broken. But up here at high temperatures, it just goes in. What happens is there's a lot of domain walls in there because it's a highly excited state. So it gets localized in a state that looks like a spin glass. It doesn't have any ferromagnetic long-range order. But then at lower energies, the number of domain walls is much smaller, and there's a ferromagnetic domain which spans the whole system, and then just a few flip domains. So this is a phase that's sort of a hybrid of it's got ferromagnetic long-range order, but it also has spin-glassy features in that the domain walls are stuck in particular locations because they're localized. And then finally, in the ground state, if all the couplings here are ferromagnetic, the ground state will just be a ferromagnet. And in these two phases here, as I say, we have localized domain walls. Okay, so here this again. Thermal ferromagnet, the system is a heat bath for itself. It's a volume L to the D. For a short-range spin model here, the barrier to flip from all spins up to all spins down, what you do is you just make a domain wall and sweep it across the system, and the domain wall costs an energy proportional to just the area, L to the D minus 1, for a system of area L. So this heat bath is big enough to make this domain wall, and so the system under the quantum dynamics will thermally activate itself over the barrier via its own unitary dynamics, right? So you can have thermal activation due to quantum dynamics. And that's what happens in this phase here, the thermal ferromagnet. In the localized spin glass and ferromagnet here, the system won't flip. And in order to flip to the other phase, it must quantum tunnel through the barrier to do the global spin flip. So there's a sharp distinction in the dynamics of how the system flips from one state to the other in a finite-sized system when you make that transition. Okay. This is sort of the end of when I'm talking about is it the end? Maybe not. No, it isn't the end. One more. I'm going to say one more thing, right? Okay, so those were examples of localization-protected symmetry-breaking order, where the system, in highly excited states, if you give it a symmetry-broken initial state, it's dynamically stable because all the thermal fluctuations are localized. Analogously, for systems that support topological order, you can do the same kind of thing in systems with quench disorder and discrete type topological orders, like Z2, for example. And these have been discussed in at least these two papers and in our paper. So what can happen in highly excited states of, say, Z2 lattice gauge theories or discrete lattice gauge theories or KITAEF type models? You can have dynamically stable topological order of a spin glass type in an isolated quantum system with many degrees of freedom. Right? And so that's discussed, as I say, in our paper and in a couple of papers here. And again, these systems are protected against thermal fluctuations by localizing all such possible fluctuations. So usually people talk about topological order being protected by you have topological order in the ground state, and it's protected by a spectral gap against thermal fluctuations. But here, you don't need a gap to protect it. You just protect it against the thermal fluctuations by localizing all the fluctuations. Okay, so that's the last. So now I'm going to go to more discussion of Schrödinger cat states. Let me just stop and ask if there's some questions about the localization stuff. Yeah. That's right. So the localized phase has a different sort of integrability. I guess in this case, yeah, it's actually, no, you're right. Yeah. So here, yeah, no, that's a good thing to point out. So here it is with the disorder, but still free fermions. And so now we have a Hamiltonian, and we have a bunch of conserved quantities, which are the occupancies of these fermion states, which all commute with the Hamiltonian, and they're local conserved quantities. So this is a type of integrable system where all the constants of motion are localized, right? So it's not like translationally invariant integrable systems where they're extended. Here they're localized, right? And that feature does survive. That's the feature that does survive. So here, right, we have constants of motion that all commute with the Hamiltonian, and they don't interact with each other in this case. And what happens when we add the interactions is those localized constants of motion stop being something so simple as just a fermion. They get dressed with all sorts of particle hole excitations in terms of the fermions, but they stay localized, and they still commute with the Hamiltonian, but now they interact with each other on the diagonal, in some sense, like Hartree, there's a Hartree interaction, and so they still commute with the Hamiltonian, but they interact with each other. So you end up with an interacting version of this. Right. So if we had this plus a whole bunch of Hartree interactions, that's essentially what the many-body localized phase looks like. But the operators are not something as simple as these guys, which are just, you know, bilinears in the spins. Well, yeah, very good point. Okay, so I just want to say a little bit more about actually this phase right here. So just a traditional ferromagnet, not localized. There's some interesting quantum dynamics in there, if I have time. And in that phase, all the eigenstates of the Hamiltonian are Schrödinger cat states, linear combinations of up plus or minus down over square root of 2. Actually, this is a more general thing. So this is a more general taxonomy of Schrödinger cat states in systems that are localized or not. So first, there is the localized Schrödinger cats, where we have some linear combination of two, so A and D mean alive and dead, but they could also mean up or down. And that the key is A and D are cats that are macroscopically different, you know, like these, macroscopically different magnetization. And in the case of localized cats, each one is localized, okay? Now, if A and D are symmetry related, like up and down, the rate of tunneling from A to D will be exponential in the volume of the system because you've got to simultaneously flip all the spins, right? So you have, right. So that's what happens when you have localization. But if you don't have localization, if your system actually is a heat bath for itself and it's thermalizing, as I said earlier, if the barrier is low enough, the system is a big enough heat bath for itself to thermally activate itself over the barrier, right? And so the rate by which it goes from A to D is given by just the Boltzmann factor going over the barrier, right? And of course, you might not even have a barrier, right? Of course, if you don't have a barrier, then it's even faster. But let's talk about the case where there is a barrier, right? And so it looks like this. You know, here's state A, you know, down and up, and there's a barrier to flipping from one to the other. And under the unitary dynamics of the spin Hamiltonian, the system will go from here to here at a rate which is given, you know, what the system does is it makes a domain wall for itself, which requires lowering its entropy. It does this all without changing its energy because we're talking about unitary quantum dynamics. So it just reorganizes its quantum fluctuations to make fewer of them in the bulk, and line up a whole bunch of them into a domain wall, and then it sweeps the domain wall across the system and goes to the other side, right? And so that's a process which is there in the unitary quantum dynamics of the system. That's the system thermally activating itself over the barrier. It's really an entropy barrier because this is all happening at constant energy. I said free energy, but really the energy is staying the same. It's really minus the entropy that's important here. Because we're talking about unitary dynamics. Okay. But then there's another case which happens in another familiar model, namely a mean field model. The barrier is too high. The system is not a strong enough heat bath to activate itself over the barrier. So if we just take the mean fieldizing model, every spin interacting with every other spin, suitably scaled to have a proper thermodynamic limit, give it a transverse field, now you have a regime where, so now the barrier to flipping the spins is extensive, and the system is an extensive heat bath for itself, but if the barrier is too high, the heat bath doesn't have enough money in its bank to pay to get over the barrier. And so what it actually does, you can do a saddle point calculation, that's in this preprint of ours. What it does is it thermally activates itself a little ways up the barrier, and then it tunnels, because it can't afford to get any higher. Right, it has to quantum tunnel, right? And you do a saddle point analysis of when it does this. And what's interesting is that within the ferromagnetic phase of just the mean field quantumizing model, there are actually three different dynamical phases where the system goes, and the phases are distinguished by the dynamics of how a finite size system tunnels from down to up, or up to down. So in the higher temperature regime of the ferromagnetic phase, it goes over the barrier. And in the lower two parts, it tunnels, like this. There's an intermediate phase where it tunnels, but you can't prepare a state with the spin up and have it Rabi oscillate. So your cat will quantum tunnel, but the relaxation of the magnetization will be overdamped. And then in the very lowest temperature regime, you can, in principle, prepare a state with the spin up, the magnetization up, and you can get the whole magnetization of the system to Rabi oscillate up to down in an underdamped oscillation. And that's the lowest phase. So these are coherent cats, you know, cats that will actually Rabi oscillate between alive and dead. And I think this is something that people are going to actually be able to produce, because people are actually making models like this with cold atoms. You just have them in a cavity, and they all couple to one mode of the cavity, and so therefore they all couple to each other. You can make mean field models very naturally with cold atoms in a cavity coupling to one photon mode. So the photon mode serves as the mean field, and they're all coupled to it. So people, I think, will be able to make Schrödinger cat states that actually oscillate between alive and dead with a Rabi oscillation. So that's kind of interesting. Okay, so I have to stop. Sort of a summary of what I said. So I talked about localization protected quantum order. What happens is you localize all thermal fluctuations and by that route stabilize the order, not by being at low temperature, just by localizing everything that might disrupt it. This happens in a very simple Ising model, so I showed you this case, and what happens there is you just localize all the domain walls to freeze in a given magnetization pattern. And that magnetization pattern then will, it's a magnetization pattern that breaks the symmetry, and it will live forever in an infinite system. It won't relax. And we have a new type of quantum phase transition that occurs. I didn't emphasize this. This is a new type of quantum phase transition. It's not a thermodynamic phase transition, and it can occur in low dimensions, such as even one dimension, and at highly excited states that would correspond to high temperature. So in that sense, it violates the Landau-Pyles theorem against phase transitions at non-zero temperature in one dimension. But the reason it violates it is because the system violates the assumption of the theorem, which is it goes to equilibrium, right? You know, these systems can have this quantum phase transition because they're not at equilibrium. They're stuck in an out-of-equilibrium state where equilibrium statistical mechanics does not apply, and therefore they don't have to obey theorems of equilibrium statistical mechanics. And then I also said a few things about the Schrödinger cat states you get in Ising ferromagnets, and they come in, as I said, a variety of species, dynamically distinguishable. Okay, thank you.
Okay, we have a few minutes for a couple of quick questions. Graham? Bruce, sorry.
Yeah, no, that you can put in, so sigma x, sigma x. I just put the model, which was, because I was citing a particular paper, I put the particular model that they did. But actually, I prefer a nearest neighbor sigma x, sigma x interaction. It's more natural and shorter range. And it should behave exactly the same way. Well, no, but if we have the disorder, they're localized, and if that interaction is weak enough, they will stay localized. Right? If you turn it up too strong, you will destroy the localization. So many-body localization is unstable, you know, in many cases, if you turn the interactions up too strong between the particles, it starts thermalizing, the localization gets destroyed. No. I just did ferromagnet because it's simplest. But yeah, an anti-ferromagnet would be the same, or anything, right?
Another question then?
Right. No, I just chose a scale so it's horizontal, right? Yeah, of course, you know, in a real system, it'll have some, right? No, that was just for artistic simplicity. the scales on the, you know, it was a schematic phase diagram, and the scales were nonlinear such that that's true.
Michelle?
No, I don't. But I know in this audience there's a lot of people who, you know, love to study this kind of stuff. So there's just so many magnetic materials where people have seen glassy behavior, right? And in very few of them has it actually been checked that, you know, it really is a spin glass transition by checking the nonlinear susceptibility, right? And I suspect there's some where, you know, people can tell me where people have looked for the nonlinear susceptibility and didn't see it diverging even though the system froze, right? And if that's the case, you know, maybe this physics, because, you know, that would be the case here. It isn't any long-range order or any thermodynamic behavior. It's just a kinetic freezing, right? You know, when you say my system froze kinetically, but it didn't develop spin-glass long-range order, you know, that's characterizes probably a fair number of experiments. You know, could many-body localization be part of the story behind that? I don't know. It's just it's an idea for people to think about.
Any more questions? Okay, let's thank our speaker again then. Thank you, David.